This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The National Health Insurance open enrollment period is underway, and if you're having trouble picking a plan under the Affordable Care Act, it may be tempting to just close your eyes and let chance decide. But this is an important decision, and this year we're seeing some changes to health plans, particularly when it comes to COVID. Also, in 2022, new surprise billing legislation goes into effect. Joining Cincinnati Edition to sort it all out and explain the changes to health care coverage you should be on the lookout for when shopping for a new plan is Consumers for Quality Care board member Jason Resendez. Jason, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Choosing a health insurance plan, whether through your employer or through the healthcare exchange, is extraordinarily challenging, even in non-pandemic times. Why is it so hard to understand what we're signing up for when we're picking insurance?
Yeah, I mean, I think things are always changing. So that never makes things easier, right? And the health system, the way it's structured, really puts the individual at the center of it all. And that has a lot of power, but that also has a lot of responsibility. So open enrollment is a really important time to really seize on the opportunity to better understand what options are a good fit for you and your family, and take time to shop around for that right plan. And I think it starts with knowing what your window is. So open enrollment started November 1st and it will be open through January 15th. And so that is the window to really make those decisions right now, keeping in mind some of the changes that you mentioned primarily related to COVID. We've seen a lot shift. As you know, we're still in the midst of a global pandemic, and with the rise of the Omicron virus becoming even more pressing to understand what changes are happening to insurance due to COVID. And we've seen, unfortunately, in every state in the District of Columbia, the top two insurers scaling back coverage for COVID-related care. So while a year ago you might have found yourself in the hospital due to COVID, your copays and fees associated with that hospital stay were likely waived, and we're seeing that start to change. So important to understand what your insurer is covering and what they're not, using that insurer phone number to understand, especially if you're in a high-risk profession related to COVID, understand what is going to be covered and what's not going to be covered.
Well, let's talk about some of that, Jason, because COVID is still with us. And as you mentioned, there's an Omicron variant that I think a lot of people are starting to pay attention to while we figure out what this might mean for us after we were brutalized by the Delta variant this year, after we had seemingly started to see the other side of the pandemic. What specifically is different about insurance plans related to COVID coverage?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of scaling, reintroduction of copays. Whereas a copay would be waived due to a hospital stay or treatment or even testing in some cases, we're seeing those copays be reintroduced. I think the number one way we're seeing this change manifest is by the reintroduction of copays for telehealth services. Telehealth, I think, is one of the silver linings of the pandemic, where we have overwhelmingly more access to care due to telehealth, addressing some longstanding equity and access gaps, to the point that, according to research that we conducted, 70% of Americans who have used telehealth over the last year are likely to continue using it even after the pandemic ends. So this is something that consumers have really come to rely on during this time where it wasn't as easy to get to a provider's office because of the risk that entailed due to COVID. And so we're seeing copays be reintroduced by a lot of insurers for telehealth services. So if you're one of those consumers that prefers telehealth because of convenience or because of the need to mitigate risk, that is something to look out for in terms of your insurance and understanding the fine print, especially if you're shopping around during the open enrollment period. Understanding what telehealth services are covered by your provider or your insurer is going to be really critical.
Jason, help us understand that a little bit more, because yes, telehealth was one of the silver linings of the pandemic. A lot of people were able to access their physician in a way other than going to the office, where you were discouraged from doing so because of the focus healthcare providers were maintaining on COVID patients, and also so we did not expose ourselves. What exactly was different previously as it relates to copays and telehealth, and what's changing?
Yeah, so what is different is that a lot of insurers waived copays related to telehealth. So there are these waivers that were in place across private insurers that enabled accessing telehealth free of a copay, free of additional expenses beyond your monthly premium. We're seeing those copays be reintroduced, particularly among private insurers. Luckily, we're still seeing within the Medicare program and Medicaid program, telehealth services that were covered and that were paid for through the waiver process are still in effect. It's really within the private insurance that we're seeing those copays be reintroduced, which is unfortunate. As you mentioned, we know that the number of private insurance telehealth claims increased by more than 8,000% over the last year. So this is, again, become something that people rely on and want to see. And it's something that we need to really ensure that we understand the fine print because we don't have those same opportunities that we had a year ago related to telehealth services.
We're talking with Jason Resendez, Consumers for Quality Care board member. Jason, when we look at some of the other waivers that were allowed by insurance companies during the earlier parts of the COVID pandemic, what do we think is the reason for the change now? Obviously, in the first year of the pandemic, we did not have access to vaccines and other treatments to assist those who either want to do the best they can to prevent sickness or to treat sickness. Is it because we have access to vaccines and better treatments now that insurance companies are re-implementing these charges?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. I think one is the introduction of vaccines and how insurance companies really evaluate risk. But then I also think it's going back to business as usual in terms of putting profits ahead of patients. I mean, I think the scaling back of copay coverage for things like hospital stays is part of a larger trend that we see of hospital systems and insurers really putting profits ahead of patients. I mean, we see things like toxic billing practices that even in the middle of a pandemic where folks, you know, are relying on the medical system, we're seeing hospital systems, for example, put lien-ins on people's homes to recoup medical debt. We're seeing, you know, lawsuits on the rise in some states due to trying to recoup medical debt. So I think it's part of a larger move back to trying to get to the status quo of seeking out as much profit as possible, even in the midst of this pandemic.
Jason, the United States is a very wealthy country. It is a very strong country militarily. I'm wondering, what does someone in your position learn about America and its healthcare delivery in the pandemic, in spite of being so wealthy and so mighty?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really has shown that if we put all of our focus on a goal, that we can achieve that goal, right? We put a focus on curbing the impact of the pandemic, the development of vaccines at rapid pace and at a pace that we've never seen to date. And now we have a number of vaccines on the market being deployed where a year ago, you know, that was a hope on the horizon. So I think it's really shown the might of the American healthcare system, but certainly the inequities that we see in terms of vaccine deployment and uptake, in terms of the development of those vaccines and equity gaps and trial participation for a lot of those vaccines, really underscores the road that we still have ahead in terms of ensuring equitable access to these innovations. And so while we have a lot of might, we still have a long road to go in terms of ensuring that that is expressed equitably across the country.
Well, you had mentioned just moments ago, people and their medical debt, people having liens on property or other liens because of medical debt. I mean, other Western countries don't deal with this sort of situation. And these are countries that are not as wealthy as the United States, that do not have the military of the United States. And so I'm wondering, what do you think we as a country have learned about the way we deliver healthcare?
Yeah, I think we've learned just how fragmented that system is across systems in terms of from hospital to hospital, from state to state. And then I think also from population to population. If anything, we've learned just how this is still a system of those who are wealthy and privileged is a completely different system than those who are less privileged and are often, unfortunately, people from minoritized backgrounds. And so I think it really is critical to confront those equity gaps front and center, not just think about this from a service delivery perspective, but also think about this from a health equity perspective. The pandemic has certainly put that front and center in a way that we can't ignore anymore. I think we're starting to make some progress there. I think we're seeing more of a engagement on some of these equity gaps. For example, I think one of the big changes that we're also seeing are these surprise medical bills, right? These were issues where folks were going to receive care from a hospital or from a site of care that they knew were in network, but got hit with a surprise bill because maybe the ambulance that took them to that in network hospital was out of network, or maybe while they were in the hospital, they got seen by an out of network provider. A lot of cases is like an anesthesiologist, for example, and they get hit with a big bill that is really on their responsibility. This is something that we see, I think, in low resource areas often happen. And now, thanks to Congress and thanks to a big uproar over these surprise medical bills, we're starting to see greater engagement. Legislation has been passed. It'll close this loophole in 2022. But until then, surprise medical bills are something that we have to continue to be aware of. But, you know, more intervention, more vigilance is required by the government and also by consumers.
You're calling this surprise billing, and this was addressed by the Congress in December of last year, and I understand it goes into effect as law in January. You talked about ambulances, but we're seeing surprise billing. I mean, if you're picked up in an ambulance, unfortunately in this country, we know that that means there's probably some sort of charge, but how are we supposed to navigate all of these different mechanisms of healthcare delivery, especially if there's an emergency situation where you're transported by an ambulance? I mean, how are you not surprised by the number of bills that might come?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's why, one, it's so important to have legislative action, because this does put too much, I think, of a burden on the consumer to, in an emergency situation, have to be their own doctor and determine, you know, am I asked questions about coverage and in-network care before we're seeking emergency care. So definitely, it's important to have that legislative action take place. But it goes back to this idea of, you know, really recognizing yourself as a consumer. So where you can, plan for care as much as possible. If you're in an emergency situation, and obviously that's less feasible, recognize the power of your voice and really push back when you get a bill. I like to think about reading your hospital bill just like you would read in a bill at a supermarket to make sure you didn't get charged twice for certain services, and then be persistent in pushing back. We've seen across the country in Ohio and beyond instances of folks getting charged with exorbitant fees due to a hospital stay, whether that was a surprise bill or some other issue, categorization of an expense, for example, and pushing back, right? Being persistent and pushing back and getting the media involved, really acting as an advocate and consumer voice for yourself is one way that you can push back and react to these instances of price gouging and exploitation of consumers in the healthcare system. It's not ideal, right? But it is the reality of the current system.
What are some other examples of surprises that might show up in a medical bill?
Yeah, we've seen, for example, there's a story of a woman who recently gave birth, and because she entered through the emergency room door because the other access point to the hospital was closed, they charged her with a three-figure bill because they said it was emergency care that she received. Although everything happened, pregnancy was normal, everything happened as planned, but the fact that she walked through the emergency room, she didn't have a bed in the emergency room, she just literally walked into the hospital through the emergency room. They were able to classify that as emergency care. There's so many examples of folks getting charged due to a classification or I think most popular are these sort of being seen by an out-of-network provider and getting hit with a big bill, which is what precipitated this congressional action. And there are things that people do that put themselves in the situation. So one thing that we are really focused on flagging for individuals, particularly during the open enrollment period, are these things called short-term limited duration insurance plans. These are junk plans, basically, plans that are meant to be stop gaps between losing COBRA coverage and getting your next job. These things were meant to last in a temporary way to give you coverage for maybe 6 months as you are between jobs. But they really proliferated over the last 4 years. And these, again, exclude coverage on pre-existing conditions, often exclude things like heart conditions, sometimes even pregnancy is included as a pre-existing condition. And what happens is people see these and on paper they look great because they have low monthly premiums, but they come with high deductibles and often exclude these pre-existing conditions. So this is an example that where folks have gone to get care because they think, hey, I have health insurance, and they get hit with a big bill because the care they received was not covered by this junk plan. So be wary of the term short term when you're shopping around for a plan during open enrollment.
All right, Jason, we are short on time, but I want to get a couple of phone calls in if we can. I've got Cindy on the line. Hi, Cindy. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My son got an add-on dental plan through one of the exchange. He's on the exchange. And when he went to go to a dentist, the 30 providers listed all said they did not take that insurance. Subsequently, he ended up spending $2,500 on a root canal and a crown. Does he have any recourse with this? I mean, this is just awful.
Thank you for the call, Cindy. We'll hang up and see if Jason can assist with that. Jason, any advice on that?
Yeah, I would definitely push back on the bill. I would also contact your state insurance commissioner. They should have a helpline if you Google state insurance commissioner to report that. And they might likely have resources for you to utilize. But certainly, I think a lot of folks and experts would say, don't pay that first bill. Really push back and explain the situation. Get folks like your insurance commissioner involved. That only helps to build your case to be able to rectify that situation.
Jason Resendez is Consumers for Quality Care board member. Jason, thank you so much for the time you gave us today and the explanations.
Great. Thanks for having me.
The Contemporary Arts Center here in Cincinnati is partnering with a museum in Kansas City for a special exhibit showcasing works by Midwestern artists. We'll talk about it. And later, the long history of winemaking in Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.